Welcome to UBS On Air. My name is Isaac Choda, and I am the product manager for donor advised funds at UBS. Today, we're breaking down one of the most significant tax developments in recent years, the recently passed H.R. 1, also known as the One Big Beautiful Bill. Signed into law this July, the legislation extends some familiar provisions and introduces some brand new ones that will directly impact how donors, advisors, and nonprofits navigate charitable giving. Joining me to unpack this is Gil Nussbaum from National Philanthropic Trust. Gil is NPT's Chief Administrative and Legal Officer and an expert on tax policy regarding philanthropy and donor advised funds specifically. Gil, glad to have you here with us today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Gil, I wanted to ask you some questions, and I wanted to start with the basics. My first question is, what does this new legislation change for donors?
The final version of H.R. 1, the One Big Beautiful Bill, included a number of provisions that could impact charitable giving and the nonprofit sector more broadly. As it relates to individual giving and donors specifically, first, the legislation introduced a 0.5% of adjusted gross income floor for the charitable contribution deduction for individuals. So in other words, donors can only claim the charitable contribution deduction to the extent that their total charitable contributions exceed a 0.5% of their adjusted gross income. And similarly, there's a 1% taxable income floor for charitable contributions or for the charitable contributions deduction for corporations. Now, compounding the issue, the legislation also caps the value of itemized deductions at 35% or 35 cents on the dollar. So in other words, donors in the highest tax bracket of 37% will not get dollar for dollar value of the deduction for their charitable contributions, right? Because it'll be limited to 35%. To soften the blow of the floor, the legislation also introduced an above-the-line charitable deduction for non-itemizers, and that is fixed at $1,000 for individuals and $2,000 for married couples who file jointly. I'll note that gifts to donor-advised funds, gifts to supporting organizations, and gifts to private foundations do not qualify for the universal deduction. It's not all bad. The legislation also made permanent the 60% adjusted gross income limit for the charitable deduction for cash contributions to public charities. That was a provision that was increased from 50% to 60% in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, and it was set to expire at the end of this year. And the legislation also further increased the standard deduction by $1,000 for individuals and $2,000 for married couples filing jointly. And you might recall it was originally increased significantly by the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. The result of all of this, though, is that you could see fewer taxpayers itemizing and more people taking advantage of the universal deduction, given the higher standard deduction and the generosity of the final version of the universal deduction.
Got it. Thank you so much, Gil. So from what I gather, the game is changing, and not just for high net worth individuals, but for everyone. Gil, then how are you seeing clients and advisors react to these new realities?
You know, it really comes down to planning. The big focus right now is, whether to take action now in 2025, to take advantage of the preferential rules before the new changes go into effect, and also on planning ahead for 2026 and beyond. For 2025, there remains no floor for the charitable deduction. There's no cap on the value of itemized deductions, as there will be under the new legislation starting next year. So donors, may want to give more this year to maximize their tax benefits. Looking ahead to 2026 and beyond, advisors are going to need to understand whether their clients intend to itemize going forward or whether they intend to claim the standard deduction. And advisors can then help plan accordingly. For example, you might have some clients who want to consider a bunching strategy going forward to overcome the giving floor, right? This is the idea that you make a larger contribution to a vehicle like a donor advised fund or other planning, you know, long-term charitable giving vehicle in year one to get the benefit of the deduction. You make a larger gift that's larger than the floor. And then you space out your grants or distributions to organizations that you've historically supported according to your traditional giving patterns. I think additional conversations are going to revolve around changes to the state and local tax deductions and planning around that. Right? The one big beautiful bill increased the deduction from $10,000 to $40,000. But it also phases it out for taxpayers with incomes over $500,000. So there will be additional planning involved there as well. And I think that there are going to be real decisions to be made about itemizing versus claiming the standard deduction.
Got it. Thank you, Gil. So you mentioned the word floor and also 0.5% AGI threshold. How could our listeners plan for that?
Sure. And so we just talked briefly about this idea of bunching, right? Bunching is a strategy that emerged following the raising of the standard deduction by the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act back in 2017. It's a strategy that we've seen a lot of clients and donors implement effectively and carry out effectively over the last, you know, 7-8 years. And it's a strategy that still works. And it will continue to work under the new rules. This idea that you consolidate multiple years of giving into one tax year to overcome the floor, the half a percent hurdle. You put it in a vehicle like a donor advised fund or a foundation or other long-term giving vehicle. And then you space out your gifts to the organizations that you like to support according to your regular giving pattern. So if you typically give $1,000 a year to, you know, Charity X, you could give $5,000 to a donor advised fund today and then continue over the next 5 years to give the $1,000 to the charity you support, according to how you've always done it. I think another thing that clients should be thinking about, again, which you just talked about, is whether to accelerate giving this year before the new rules take effect in 2026. There is no giving floor this year. So, you know, any amount that's given to charity is deductible this year for donors who itemize their deductions. I think, you know, advisors and clients should run scenarios to see where they land and ultimately what makes most sense. But in the end, I want to just, you know, make clear, there are still tax benefits that will be associated with charitable giving into the future. You know, the new legislation limits the benefits to some extent, but, you know, in our experience, many donors remain charitably inclined, and they will want to continue to sustain their giving beyond just the focus on tax and the tax strategy. Again, they're going to continue to get tax benefits. They will be reduced, right? You're only going to be able to claim the deduction to the extent it exceeds the floor, the half a percent. For donors in the highest tax bracket, the deduction is not worth quite as much as it was, but it's still a benefit.
Got it. Thank you so much, Gil. Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about donor advised funds, DAFs. How do they fit into this evolving picture?
Well, I'll start with pointing out, as I mentioned, donor advised funds, gifts to donor advised funds, don't qualify for the new universal deduction. Outside of that, donor advised funds were largely unaffected by the recent tax law changes. You know, DAFs remain a top choice for flexibility and long-term impact as a giving vehicle. For donors who plan to implement a bunching strategy, as we've been discussing, donor advised funds are probably the top choice as a vehicle to facilitate that strategy, primarily for their ease of use, their low cost, the ease of administration, as opposed to, for example, setting up a foundation for that purpose. DAFs also can help clients navigate uncertainty, right? You know, assets contributed to a DAF belong to the DAF sponsor. They're forever set aside for charity. In the face of uncertain market behavior and economic times, in the face of uncertain changes in tax policy and so forth, those are assets that are set aside for giving, even if you're not sure about whether you want to write a new check to charity out of your bank account. And lastly, DAFs continue to be an important legacy tool that integrate well with estate planning. You can give, you know, you can leave a gift or a bequest to your donor advised fund and establish a legacy for your family, a charitable giving legacy into the future.
Got it. Thank you so much for that, Gil. As part of the first question, you mentioned about changes to giving for corporations. And I'd like to return to that point. What's new for them?
Well, the big thing that's new is, you know, similar to the 0.5% floor or threshold for giving by individuals, corporations going forward will be subject to a 1% of their taxable income floor for charitable giving. So in other words, corporations only be able to claim a charitable deduction against their corporate income tax to the extent that their charitable giving exceeds 1% of their taxable income. You know, in addition to that, there's a 10% of taxable income limit to the charitable deduction for corporations. And there's also a 5-year carry forward, you know, to the extent that a corporation can't take advantage of the full amount of their gifts. So, you know, corporations may want to proactively manage or potentially increase their giving to ensure that they exceed the income floor and can take advantage of the deduction. I think those are conversations that will definitely be taking place. But all of that said, I would note that corporate giving really spiked during the pandemic, and it's been on the decline ever since. You know, I think that this legislation is not going to be helpful in encouraging increased corporate giving because it, you know, potentially disincentivizes corporations, and we were already seeing corporate giving on the decline.
Well, thank you so much for all your comments here, Gil. Before we wrap up, what's the a big takeaway that you want to share with our listeners?
Sure. I think, you know, the big thing right now is planning. Right? You want to plan now. Tax law is complex. The changes are not so easy to understand, and they're coming. And so clients will need to understand how the new rules are going to affect them, how they're going to affect their giving power. And advisors can serve as the bridge between, you know, their clients and this planning. And so I think it's really important for advisors to understand the rules and how they will impact their clients and to have those difficult conversations with their clients about what they want to do going forward.
Thank you so much, Gil, for talking to us today. Once again, that was Gil Nussbaum from National Philanthropic Trust. To our listeners, keep in mind that this new legislation may be reshaping the rules around philanthropy, but it also opens the door for building deeper relationships with your clients and also with your advisors, and to engage in more intentional, powerful giving in the future. Thank you so much. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Financial Services, Inc. does not provide legal or tax advice, and this does not constitute such advice. UBS strongly recommends that persons obtain appropriate independent legal, tax, and other professional advice. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG, member FINRA SIPC.